Yankees Files podcast. After a brief hiatus, we are back. I'm Will Harris, you're Alec Whipple, and the rest of you in the time that the Yankees Files podcast was away witnessed what is to this point the entire Jason Dominguez era. He debuted, he raked, he tore his UCL, and he got put on the IL needing Tommy John surgery. So that's kind of crazy. For a second, I thought that maybe our hiatus had brought on his success, but now we have to worry that it brought on his injury. So putting that aside, as we all know, the most important thing that happened while we were gone is not that the Yankees tied their longest winning streak of the year. It is not that the Yankees swept the Astros in Houston. It is not that the Yankees won probably the weirdest game of the year in which they got no hit for more than 10 innings on Sunday. It is that it's September 11th and the Irish are undefeated. So Whipple, that's my spiel. How are you doing?
Well, you know, I want to flash it back to a week and a half ago where, as people know online, you were away. You left the child at home running the show, the keys to the car. And your only instructions were don't crash the car. I feel like I avoided some, you know, treacherous pitfalls. I might have picked some battles with Orioles fans online. And I think I generally had a good time running Yankees Files in those few days. But one of the things, I think one of the messages you had to me was that we gotta get engagement. We gotta boost some engagement, you know, get people involved with the Yankees Files. I that's what I thought you meant, but I had no idea that apparently that statement or that message was in a different context, because I don't even think my feelings right now are as relevant as your big life update. I got to kick it back to you for maybe the first time in Yankees Files history. How are you feeling? How are you doing?
I feel great. I got while we were on hiatus and while I was off Twitter, and it's ironic that it happened while I was off Twitter, I was able to capture the most important engagement of my life to this point. Not our 2,800 followers, but my then girlfriend, now fiance, and I got engaged at the end of August on Nantucket. It was lovely. It was a huge moment. And man, we were so happy. I think it was appropriate to be off Twitter for that time. But yeah, I would say Yankees Files engagement is nice, but this engagement is better.
It's engagement files now.
It is engagement and files.
You know, I assume when we started this, when you said, you know, we're going to be married to the podcast, so we're married to the game. I thought that was serious. I didn't realize that it was only a metaphor, but I'm extremely happy. We've known each other for so long, and it's really awesome to see you guys, you know, get ready to make the ultimate commitment beyond fandom of a sports team. You know, we are real people too, but I could not be happier. You relayed the story to me, and it sounds like everything went great. And it's a new era for the pod for sure, but I think as long as, you know, you're under the you're aware that you're going to need to contribute to watching games and continuing to record the pod and follow the team, and you're not ready to throw it all away for some girl. No, we are very pro Terse. She is our biggest fan, and yeah, I'm really happy for both of you, and just congratulations from the other half of Yankees Files.
Thank you. And the Yankees, I think, are what, like 7-4 since I proposed? So
they're definitely better. Like, you did something right.
I certainly did. I think I did a lot right to get her to say yes. But I want to shout out a few people who, I was going to say who made this possible, but that's not what I mean. A few people who reached out with congratulations, who are listening to this podcast. First of all, Whipple, your lovely mother, Cynthia. I really appreciated her reaching out and sending her congratulations and best wishes. Our sixth grade teacher, Mrs. Seidel. Mrs. Seidel, we can clip this part of the podcast for you. You knew me when. And of course, Ray Perez. Ray, you know who you are and where you are. Appreciate the congratulations. You told me to make sure I mentioned the engagement on the podcast, and now I have done so. Appreciate that advice. See you soon. So Whipple, with that, I mean, there's so much to discuss. I don't even know where to start. The Yankees game against the Red Sox that was supposed to be happening right now just got postponed. There's been so much baseball since we last recorded a podcast. I don't even know where to begin. What are you feeling like talking about?
I feel like we have to go back right to when you texted me and you said, I got to get off Twitter. The nerves are too much. This is just distracting me. And I took over the reins. And I think almost immediately we learned of the call-up of Jason Dominguez and Austin Wells. And we saw them debut in a maybe one of the best weekends of the season in Houston. And as I was steering the ship by myself, I was just amazed. And I know the Dominguez news is obviously overshadowed by the more recent developments, which we can talk about. But I think we got to start back in that weekend because I was just amazed at watching the kids for sure. But I was really amazed at how quick vibes could switch within a baseball season. Like, it's kind of a shame that we didn't record that weekend because I feel like we went from, and again, we all know where the Yankees are right now. We know the injuries. But a week ago, we were talking about, or 2 weeks ago, we were talking about the season being over. And then a week ago, I think people were starting to map out the outside shot at a playoff run. But more than that, just sweeping a really good Astros team and just a different energy to the team that we had seen in a few months. And I just thought it was, you know, outside of the actual performances of the players, I just thought, given all of our conversations about who's responsible for the year, how the year is going, is it a disappointment, how far can, you know, are they going to fall, how quick can they rebound, I think last week demonstrated that a rebound is really, even with Dominguez's injury that will probably take a few months to rehab, a rebound isn't out of the question. You know, for all the people that think it's going to take multiple years, we saw it could turn around in multiple days. So if you're sitting here thinking that the 2024 Yankees are doomed, I think last week showed you that the path is here for a really good team. And I know it's just a week, but there's an infusion of young talent that's coming, that has arrived and will continue to come, that we've talked about extensively on this pod amongst ourselves and with Ryan Garcia. And I feel like there's just ample reasons to be excited. And the biggest thing in my mind is that it was the existing players playing better that spurred the better play, which did kind of confirm a lot of what we had discussed as the reasons for the Yankees' failure and the hope that they can turn it around based on certain players. But I just thought that combination of young guys coming up, old guys doing better, nothing we saw a week ago is, in my mind, unsustainable for a season. Not that, you know, it doesn't wash away everything that's happened, but I feel like we saw a little glimpse into what a turnaround, a rebuild, a, you know, rebuild on the fly, whatever you want to call it, what that might look like.
Yeah, I think you were very early to this storyline. In fact, I would argue that you actually beat some of the doomers to the punch. And maybe you were just seeing stuff I wasn't seeing, but you started combating the idea that the Yankees would be bad in 2024 before I even feel like I saw the idea that the Yankees would be bad in 2024. And you were out ahead of the notion that a rebuild would be a process that takes multiple years, that this team was not equipped to supplement the roster adequately to put a competitive team on the field in 2024. And man, we've both had a lot of takes this year. And, you know, I have my narratives about Glaber and about Gary Sanchez, and you have your narratives about Gerrit Cole. I don't know that either of us has been conclusively proven right more emphatically than you were with the Yankees calling up the kids and then immediately playing so much better. And first of all, that's awesome. I love that.
Shout out me.
But second of all, shout out you.
I love
but
me.
I don't care what list you're making. Again, if anyone understands that reference, like, just let us know.
The funny thing is, like, we say all our references and we act like there's some mystical combination. If you just go watch the Batting Stance Guys videos from like 2009 to 2012, you'll understand this podcast a lot better. But
well,
continue.
It's true. So while I was rooting through Jason Dominguez's trash and talking to his Sadie Hawkins date from high school. No. So as I was saying, not only were you conclusively proven right by the Yankees calling up the kids and then immediately playing better, one thing that I think it's worth pointing out is that the Yankees didn't win many of those games because of the non-Dominguez kids. Like, mm-hmm. Oswald Peraza's had, you know, a three-hit game or maybe two three-hit games in there, but, like, he's still not slugging. Austin Wells and Everson Pereira have shown that the learning curve for hitting at a big league level, unless you're transcendent, is steep. But so many things that we thought ought to be going well for the Yankees started to go well. Like, what happened in Houston? Judge was hitting the ball over the wall. Stanton was hitting the ball over the wall. Glaber was hitting the ball over the wall. Guys were pitching better. Even a mediocre outing from Severino didn't spiral into being terrible. Like, all the things that we've been saying, hey, take it easy on this team. They are better than this, showed through, and then they were amplified by how great Jason Dominguez was playing. And I do think that as much as I love to quantify things and have explanations that are traceable and data-driven and make sense and whatever, I think it's hard to argue against the idea that with Wells and Pereira and Peraza and Dominguez came an infusion of energy that has at least some value. I think that...
Wait a minute. Wait, but you're talking about it. Is this you and your post-engagement? You're about the vibes now? I just want to make sure I'm hearing this correctly.
I'm not about the vibes now. I'm about the vibes in this instance.
Okay, all right.
So I think that it's easy for me to understand the perspective that a team that is 62 and 68, as the Yankees were not that long ago, has little to play for. And I would never accuse, and far be it from me, to accuse professional athletes who are at the top of their craft of not giving it their all or trying their best or putting in the work. But I do think that having something to play for beyond or in place of the playoffs, which I would argue is what calling up the kids provided, you want to show that this new core is viable, I think that potentially raised the level of play from the guys around them. Now, we're talking about very good players around them. So I can't say that it wouldn't have happened anyway, but I do think that, and maybe this is just me and my post-engagement glow or wanting to buy into something kind of metaphysical, but I do think that the energy around the team shifted. And, like, look, sweeping Houston in Houston is going to shift the energy whether Jason Dominguez is there or not. But it does feel like they got something out of bringing those guys up. And it's worth being excited about. But I do want to caution people against they're winning because the kids are there. I mean, check on Everson Pereira and Austin Wells' hitting stats. It's not because of them.
Yeah, I agree. I think that we saw things. I mean, watching those games with people who are going to jump on certain things that pop up and say that's why they're winning, like stolen bases or situational hitting, which is what happened to me that weekend. Like, that's a little frustrating. I think I like that those things
are... Do you want to name names?
No, I can't. I would get in trouble.
Okay. I think I know who it was.
That, like, those things are nice when they happen, but they're not the reason for winning. But also, like, I think to your point, it's indicative of an energy that can nicely complement when, you know, the guys who are playing well play well. And in Dominguez's case, like, legitimate good play, legitimate game-winning play. But mm-hmm. it's a process, and I think people... I guess for me, it's like what the Yankees have shifted to, despite people's arguments to the contrary, is a more aggressive prospect promotion philosophy. And I think at first, that was a little disconcerting because with the Yankees, we usually are used to things operating a certain way, and then we are always going to think they operate that way. But in the long run, isn't it worth it for Anthony Volpe to develop this year, whatever winds up, you know, happening for his final stats? Will it be worth it if in 2 years, you know, he's taken two big leaps forward? And that's kind of the philosophy that the Yankees are using. And I think the fact that they're doing that is great. I mean, it is helping the team currently. It will help the team in the future. And I don't doubt there's a lot of research that they've done behind it. Like, they're not just making a decision because they spun the wheel and they're like, okay, today now we're going to decide to start calling up these prospects aggressively. But the confidence that gives me, that combined with the stellar farm system that they have, which people also are looking to deny, but I mean, I can tell you, like, Anthony Volpe might not win Rookie of the Year, even though I didn't say he was going to, but I will die on the hill that the Yankees are going to have a top 10 farm system heading into 2024. They have that depth of prospect caliber in the minor, and they have guys who are literally just drafted now in the top 100 on multiple lists. I mean, this is an upward trend, and what we know about this organization is that recently they've been able to develop these players a lot more successfully than in the past. And the reason for the confidence, besides any result from any one plate appearance that was witnessed in Houston, is just compare it to the last time the Yankees were looking to rebuild and, you know, where they kind of dug their heels and decided that they were going to. Their farm system was a lot more barren in 2013 and 2014. This team has no reason to go on a multiple years rebuild because they have the pieces that they need right here, and they have a lot of money coming off the books. They have basically, I mean, people will debate, you know, what contracts are albatrosses, but most of the guys who are under contract for a significant amount of years are going to be relied on to be foundational pieces, and you're going to be able to, you know, you have the resources to sign other guys. You have the young players. You have all the pieces in place to have a very quick turnaround, and I think make this year look more like an aberration. And something like last week, where you have better energy, you have the guys playing to the numbers on the back of their baseball card, is more just a confirmation of that fact instead of the kids are leading this turnaround that is, you know, finally they're figuring everything out, because that narrative falls short when you see what happened at the end of this week. But I think in the bigger picture, it's just a confirmation of the fact that they have a very talented farm system, and what has happened to their players in the farm before is not going to happen again. I should say it's not guaranteed to happen again, because past performance isn't in that specific area from 10 years ago isn't the best indicator. The best indicator is just looking at the players that we have, knowing that they overhauled their development system, looking at the contributions young guys have made in the past year or two. And again, there's some part of it that's unknown, but everything is in place for this team to be right back where it should have been this year, where it was last year, and so on. And I think if you watch last week's games and you thought something different, then, you know, you're probably not right.
Yeah. And I think, to me, you're so right on the 2016 point, which is the Yankees, who were in a much worse position, for whom, what did they have, two top 100 prospects in Judge and Sanchez?
Yeah.
Like,
I know what you're going to say. Yeah, and they had to make trades to get the farm system to a better point.
But not only that, but on top of that, things turned around so quickly. Now, again, I think there are plenty of caveats to raise with the 2017 team, from the fact that they won fewer games than the 2021 team, which was thought of as an unmitigated disaster, to the fact that they weren't actually expected to be good. But what that team did, and what it did successfully, was acquire minor league talent. This team didn't have to do that, because this team probably has more minor league or, you know, under age 23 talent than the 2016 team did, even after the Glaber and Clint Frazier acquisitions. And then they went out and got some pieces to fill out the team, and then they went to game 7 of the ALCS the next year. And for people to have seen that and then seen this team and evaluated the quality of the young players available to this team and decided, no, the Yankees are wholly incapable of winning games for the next 2 or 3 years, it just doesn't compute. Like, are people's memories that short? Because in order to get back to the time when the Yankees routinely could not, you know, bring prospects up to the major leagues and have them make an impact, you have to go back prior to the last wave. Like, who are the guys that people are mad didn't make an impact at the major league level? Clint Frazier? What, it's the Yankees' fault that concussions basically ruined his life? Greg Bird, again, there wasn't a talent problem there. There was a health problem. I don't know what the Yankees were supposed to do about that. Aaron Judge, awesome. Gary Sanchez, awesome. You sign a kid who's 16 years old and he goes on to have a bunch of 30 homer seasons and multiple all-star appearances and be the catcher on, you know, multiple ALCS teams. I don't care what narratives people want to spread about him. That's a success. So, like, who are the Yankees mad about? Again, Miguel Andujar has the best season of his career, shows up early the next year, gets hurt, and is never the same guy again. Like, in what world am I supposed to believe that that's the Yankees' fault? So who are these guys? Is it Mason Williams and Slade Heathcott? Like, who? I'm trying to understand even where this narrative is coming from, because the last time the Yankees invested in youth as a, you know, couple month long rebuild, it went awesome and it kickstarted a 6 year run of really good success in which the majority of the time that they lost in the playoffs, either it was COVID or the opposing team was cheating. Like, and then they won 100 games that, like, I just don't understand. And I do understand it. These people are doomers. Everything the organization does is wrong. They cannot be trusted to do anything correctly, so on and so forth. But the facts are not on their side, and I don't know where this is coming from.
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that people are going to say that the 2017 Yankees, those group of prospects, were not contributors. Not every contributor has to look like Aaron Judge to make an impact. And as you said, Miguel Andujar and Clint Frazier both really impacted certain Yankees teams. I mean, Frazier was really influential in the 2019 and 2020 team. Miguel Andujar was a huge reason for the 2018 team success. You know, Judge and Sanchez were at the upper level of that, and obviously Severino. But I think the difference comes in looking at for me, it's like the difference between the 2013 and the 2017 Yankees, where the 2013 Yankees were at the edge of a cliff, and you looked at those top prospects you talked about, where Mason Williams and Slade Heathcott are not going to change the fate of your organization. And I think I would argue that probably the most comparable point to that was not 2017, but really around the 2019-2020, when your top prospects were Loaisiga, Florial, Antonio Caballo, Davey Garcia, Pereira still there, Luis Gil, Michael King. So you're talking about really great relievers, but other than that, you're talking about guys who did not make an impact. And we know that the Yankees completely overhauled everything after 2019. And so this is as you said last time, you need a few years to evaluate, and this is the fruits of the overhaul and the labor that was done to draft guys after that. So I think taking it in chunks, like, there are two very distinct waves of prospects that the Yankees have brought up at the same time. And before 2016, there was nothing. I mean, I don't know how young people are listening to this, but, like, if you're too young to remember, like, the Yankees, like, never brought up prospects. And the ones they brought up would just become relievers. Or it was like Ivan Nova. But, like, that, like, the whole, like, baby bombers group of prospects, like, that's only been done twice. And the first time it was a wild success. And the reason that the Yankees started falling short in the last 2 years is because they didn't really have the farm system that they needed to from 2018 to 2020. And it was just too early to evaluate that next group. So, as I said, it's kind of a transition year. And in that way, it could be looked at as a success, if you want to say, you know, winning 91 and 99 games in a transition year. But that's too, I guess, like, I'm not even going to go that far. Like,
I wouldn't.
But I guess the point is, like, this is comparable, if not better, depending on how it turns out, than the 2016-2017 team. And I feel like the way people are going to evaluate it is all going to hinge on if Dominguez is better than Aaron Judge or just as good as Aaron Judge. And I really hope that doesn't happen.
Which is insane.
Because that group, the previous group was good even without Aaron Judge, and this group can be good if there is not another Aaron Judge.
I just want to talk about the pre-2017 top 10 prospects that the Yankees had. I think, first, the way we have to couch this is I underrated them before. They had 9 guys in the Baseball Prospectus top 101. Now, should they have? No. For example, Albert Abreu was ranked 12 spots ahead of Walker Buehler. That shouldn't have happened. But I just want to go through this list. Yankees top 10 prospects prior to that year per Baseball Prospectus. 1, Gleyber Torres. He's been awesome for them. 2, Clint Frazier. There were multiple years in which he was awesome for them, and then a concussion ruined his life. 3, Jorge Mateo. Traded for a guy they expected to be great for them in a pennant race. 4, Blake Rutherford, traded for multiple guys who were great for them in a pennant race. 5, Justice Sheffield, traded for a guy who was awesome for them in a pennant race. 6, James Caprellian, same as Jorge Mateo. 7, Aaron Judge, the best player on the planet. 8, Albert Abreu, whatever. 9, Tyler Wade, how did he get on this list? 10, Chance Adams, bust. So I would argue that they got a lot out of those top 10 prospects, particularly because if I showed you a top 10 prospect list from any year and said you get an MVP, you wouldn't care what the rest of the guys do.
Wait. Can we go back to the greatest team that everyone is convinced that could never do anything wrong and look at how their top 10 prospects were the next year?
Yes. Can we please do that?
Baseball America 2009, technically 2010, but like post 2009 Yankees top prospects. 1, Austin Jackson.
Oof.
All right, like traded for Granderson, above average career. That's fine. 2, Jesus Montero. We all know about Jesus Montero. 3, Andrew Brackmann. We really know about Andrew Brackmann. 4, Austin Romine, perpetual backup catcher.
Yeah.
5, Dellin Betances, who was legend, like the longest of shots to make an impact and definitely success story, but not when he was ranked as a starter.
Yeah.
Zach McAllister, Alfredo Aceves, Phil Koch, Mark Melanson. Basically, like, the bullpen. And then Bradley Suttle, who, like, I'm only half sure that I know. Bradley Suttle. We're in a different place. And, again, we don't know what these guys are going to look like. But I'm telling you, these top 10 prospects were nowhere near the same caliber. And the Yankees largely are getting, I mean, they're winning, you know, before this year, they're winning in the upper 90s most years. So it's not a question of draft position. It's a question of, has this farm system gotten better at developing players? Even though everybody wants to say no, it is unequivocally yes.
Bradley Suttle was fine, but I really liked Bradley Super Obvious.
Ba-dum.
Oh, man, that's good. That's good. Anyway.
We got jokes.
We do. So, you're right. Like, to act like the Yankees are not competent or even at this point quite good at developing prospects is kind of a ridiculous proposition. And yet a bunch of people are going to say that that's the case. So, more power to them. So, I feel like where we left the Yankees in our discussion that turned into this discussion, they had just completed a sweep in Houston and they were coming back to New York for Jason Dominguez to make his debut at Yankee Stadium, and they were going to play the Detroit Tigers. And the first two games went great and they got back over 500. And then they played the exact same game of baseball 3 days in a row. Like, what happened on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday? That was ridiculous. It was like perfect clones of each other 3 days in a row.
The BABIP tweet. I'm not gonna share the BABIP tweet, but we all, if you're listening to this, you'll know it.
Everyone knows the BABIP tweet.
Yeah, I feel like I agree. I think if we recorded this pod on Saturday, I feel like we're missing the most interesting game, but it would have been, you know, just basically capturing, like, I think a team playing a little bit above its head that just really, I don't know, like, for a few games, just seemed like every single one of those games they ended up, yeah, like you said, blowing it in either the early innings or the pitching staff collapsing in the late innings. Yeah, I don't know. It's you're definitely right on that one. Thankfully, we got Sunday's game, though.
So the Yankees went on Sunday to play. I don't know that it was the weirdest game I've ever seen, just because, like, we talk about weird games, and you have, like, the Melky Mesa game, and you have the game where they hit all those grand slams against the A's that time, and you have whatever else.
2019.
You have every game that was ever played in 2019. The Twins Yankees, game.
I think the Yankees-Twins one might be, like, the wildest, but this one had some things that were, like, historically weird.
Yeah, so the Yankees got no hit into the 11th inning. And first of all, let me just say, I was rooting so hard for the Yankees in the bottom of the 10th after Tommy Canley held the Brewers scoreless. I was rooting so hard for the Yankees to just hit two sack flies and win the game without getting a hit. Do you know how hilarious that would have been to me?
It would have been so funny. I
would still be tweeting about it. I would be insufferable. I would be the biggest villain on the internet if the Yankees were 1-0 this year in games where they got zero hits. Can you imagine that?
And especially, I mean, I feel bad for the Brewers outfielder who Sal Frelick crashed into. Yeah. I forgot who it was, but yeah.
Joey Weimer.
Yeah, imagine, I mean, losing the game is bad, but imagine getting the no-hitter and having that, like, catch beyond highlight reel and then just being like, oh, yeah, we lost. It's almost better that they didn't get the no-hitter.
Exactly. And as my grandmother pointed out, Sal Frelick, who I'm sure was very concerned for Joey Weimer, didn't initially realize what had happened after he caught the ball. So he's, like, dancing around the outfield celebrating, and there's Joey Weimer just bleeding profusely out of his face. And it's like, dude, Sal, your boy is not okay.
Yeah, it would have been up there, though, if they got the no-hitter and won with the Wise catch. I feel like you're talking about, yeah. I mean, it's still a great catch, but when that happened, I mean, that was cruel. And then,
yeah, I mean, completely ridiculous.
Talk about who got the game-winning hit, because that was the rumor that I started spreading, that that's why this pod was canceled yesterday, because you didn't want to see Kyle Higashioka potentially get his last great Yankees moment before being shot into the sun.
Yeah, so it was Franklin Roosevelt whose last words were, "I have a terrific headache," and yesterday I had a terrific headache. And I texted Whipple and I was like, can we please record tomorrow? I cannot talk for an hour right now. I can't wear headphones. Like, I can't be staring at screens. Like, I'm just not going to do this. And did it look like I was trying to avoid or minimize talking about Kyle Higashioka's first walk-off hit as a New York Yankee? Yes, it looked like that. But I won't have my good name dragged through the mud by, I thought we were friends, by one of my friends on the heels of my engagement to pull out this just absolute smear tactic. I have never once neglected to give Kyle Higashioka credit when he does something good. And Kyle Higashioka did something awesome last night. He got a walk-off hit, a barrel no less, and you know I love my barrels, in a game where the Yankees were no hit for more than 9 innings. And I think that's great. I really appreciate him doing that. Does it mean that he's suddenly a good player? No, but he doesn't have to. That's fine.
I just enjoy watching you squirm every time he does something, which he clearly times just when he's being kicked to the curb by
he
you.
He does.
It's the 2022 IKF mantle of, as soon as you're at the exactly. end of your rope, you get the hit to keep you alive. And I mean, I think, you know, I'm a Higashioka stan. I wouldn't be opposed to, you know, bringing him around for another year to pair with Wells. But I recognize that that wouldn't be the smartest thing to do. And, you know, he has the longest tenured Yankee at this point, or at least organizationally. So it's great to see him get his moment in the sun. Yeah, it is a little weird.
Can we stop with the longest tenured Yankee in the organization? That's such a ridiculous thing.
It is.
Like, what? Because it took him a really long time to make the major leagues. Suddenly, that's like a grand distinction. He's not the longest tenured Yankee. Like, I would venture to guess that when Eric Jagielo, former podcast guest, Notre Dame graduate, friend of Jake Cave, was traded for Aroldis Chapman, I bet he didn't go around talking about his tenure as a Yankee. Like, that's ridiculous. Maybe his tenure in the Yankees organization, sure. But that, like, when you talk about Derek Jeter's career as a Yankee, when do you talk about it starting?
1992.
No, you don't. That's a lie. That's, you just, I can't have, this is ridiculous.
No, it's fair.
You don't. I should have picked someone
else.
You know
what?
When you talk about Joe DiMaggio's career as a Yankee, when do you talk about it starting?
Whenever they got him from the San Francisco Seals.
That's what I thought.
You know what, though? You know what? We love a one for me, one for you. And because I did get my moment to talk about Kyle Higashioka and his status as the longest tenured Yankee, parentheses, organizationally, end parentheses, I think we do have to, on a bit of a more somber note, talk about the actual longest tenured Yankee and what happened to him last weekend.
Yeah. So for those who are not up to speed on this, the actual longest tenured Yankee is one of my favorite pitchers of all time, Luis Severino. And Luis Severino, I really thought after last year, which he spent healthier than he had in, you know, any year prior, going back to 2021, which he spent pitching quite effectively, a year in which he was electric at moments, I thought it was a sign of things to come. And then the injury bug bit him again this year. He was largely ineffective when healthy. And ultimately, and unfortunately, his Yankees career, I think we can say, likely ended when he was removed from his start on Friday against the Brewers. He was having abdominal pain, oblique pain, some sort of upper body pain, and said he felt like he had been shot, which I don't like that for him, but you could tell he was in extreme pain on the mound. And he's since been put on the IL. He's obviously becoming a free agent at the end of the season. Whipple, I don't think we'll be seeing Luis Severino pitch in a Yankee uniform again. I think he certainly will not be getting the qualifying offer after his record of health and performance this year. But Luis Severino, I think in many ways, is the forgotten man when it comes to pulling the Yankees out of their doldrums in, you know, 2013, 14, 15, 16, and then just being great thereafter. Luis Severino on the two immediate teams after 2016 was, as far as I'm concerned, and he was, you know, on teams with good pitchers, the unquestioned ace. He was worth 11 Fangraphs WAR in that time. He was striking everyone out. He pitched to a 3.18 ERA in 384 and two-thirds innings, which it's crazy to think of him going 190 plus innings in back-to-back years today. And man, I always had so much fun watching Luis Severino pitch. He was phenomenal. He would strike guys out and then scream. I don't think we can forget the performances he delivered in 2017 in the playoffs after his abysmal start in the wild card game, for him to bounce back and be as effective as he was phenomenal. And man, it's a story of what ifs, I think, with him. Just what if he could have stayed healthy? And more than anything, I think for Luis Severino, and I hope for Luis Severino, you know, when Randy Johnson was 29 and a half years old, Randy Johnson had really not done a whole ton as a Major League Baseball player as compared to what he would go on to accomplish. And there's no shortage of examples of pitchers who were highly successful in their early 30s. And while I regret that it's unlikely that if Luis Severino captures something like that, he'll do so with the Yankees, but I sincerely hope that he is able to have a career renaissance wherever he goes, because, man, it's just been so much fun watching Severino, and what an unfortunate ending to his Yankees tenure.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any way it was really going to end like great after what's happened this year, but you just hate to see what actually happened. I mean, nobody wants anyone to get injured, and it was sad because I think, like you said, he was kind of the original guy. I mean, we just spent like 20 minutes talking about the lack of viable prospects from the early, for Yankee teams for a lot of years, and from what I specifically remember from the late 2000s, early 2010s. And I think Severino was one of the first prospects that I remember where, you know, he was coming up as a guy and then he developed eventually into that guy. And it just seemed like, you know, he was the fruits of the farm system finally paying off in, you know, a real tangible way. And I remember watching him come up in 2015. I actually saw him in 2013 in single A Charleston. And I remember being,
that's insane.
Yeah. I remember being excited about him then, but when he struggled in 2016 after the hot 2015 start, and then came back in 2017, I thought we were witnessing, you know, the beginnings of like a all-time great career. And I think, well, you know, you don't know, again, going back to our other conversation, not everyone has to be an MVP or a Cy Young to contribute. And you don't know what his career would have looked like if he had stayed healthy. But we do know, as you said, he contributed to a lot of really great, successful teams, both in the regular season and the playoffs. And I think his energy was just such a powerful force of those teams, and I'm glad that he made it back. I've actually, as I'm recording this, I'm looking at my wall, and spring 2022, the Yankees magazine poster is him walking off the mound after the 2021 return against the Rangers, and I'm emotional thinking about it. I'm so glad he got to come back after basically 3 years away, minus a few starts at the end of 2019, from Tommy John, from all sorts of injuries, come back and pitch and then be effective for another winning Yankees team. I mean, I know it sounds, you know, like small potatoes in context, but for a guy who struggled with injuries, like those moments and just looking at the reaction on his face, I mean, it's just, it's cool. It's one of the things that I love about baseball is just so many guys, you know, so many storylines, and just despite how the Yankees are doing, just to zero in on Severino's unfulfilled promise. I think the flip side is there was a lot of fulfilled promise and a lot of great moments. And I'm just happy that we got to, you know, experience some of those.
Yeah. I mean, I think getting what was going into this year, 14 and a half Fangraphs WAR from a guy you call up at age 21 to legitimately great seasons as well. Like, I think you're pretty happy with that just from an objective lens of evaluating what you would accept from a prospect in his first six or so years. But yeah, it's just a shame that the guy that we saw in 2017 and 18 wasn't able to stick around. And you can bet that if and when Luis Severino is successful elsewhere, as Gary Sanchez has been, I will be insufferable in telling people about it and chiding the Yankees for failing to capture that value by bringing him back.
And I will fully expect you to. Your Gary Sanchez revenge tour has been, although delayed by a little bit, a smashing success in the year of our Lord 2023.
And of course, symmetrically and poetically, Gary Sanchez was put on the 60-day IL today, so he's out for the season, which is brutal. So
Wells Sanchez catching combo next year. No more defense.
A Gary and Wells platoon in spite of Gary's reverse splits. I'm in. Also, don't say that no defense nonsense. Gary Sanchez has been a good defensive catcher this year. And now that year is over, we can say Gary Sanchez was a good defensive catcher this year. Get out of town.
Okay. Noted.
All right. Yeah, that's right. So, Whipple, the Yankees this week, I mean, it's just things, the base state of things for this team is ridiculousness. So, of course, with the postponement today, the Yankees will play a doubleheader tomorrow. They'll then play two more games in Boston and three in Pittsburgh before returning home after their next off day to face Toronto. I don't really know what the productive discussion is to have here. The Yankees are, although not mathematically eliminated from playoff contention, they are functionally eliminated. It would be very difficult to make up eight games and jump three teams in a 19-game span. So I don't think it's really relevant or valuable for us to talk about the individual game results that may or may not occur in that period. But I do think, especially in light of the Jason Dominguez injury, which is, of course, unfortunate and puts a real damper on these last couple weeks of the season, I think maybe even... No, I won't replace the confidence rating. I'm not going to be a totally new man. But I think in addition to our confidence rating, maybe each of us can call out two things that we're looking for the Yankees to show us over these last 19 games of the season. So I'll throw it to you first. Your confidence in this team, again, whatever that means in this like kind of adjusted era, and two things you're looking for the team to show you over the remainder of the season.
Yeah. Okay. First of all, I hate the new balance schedule. I just want to say, maybe that's a hot take, but like, it's so weird to see them playing like Milwaukee, Pittsburgh, Arizona, and Kansas City.
Yeah.
Like, the division races are fun because you play a lot of games against those teams. I know the Yankees aren't in a division race, but like, I'm a little annoyed at that. So I'm like the meme of the guy on Twitter standing up to speak, because I feel like
exactly.
I feel like everyone loves it. And I'm just like, what the hell? I just like would rather play Baltimore and Tampa again. But
I think you're right.
That has nothing to do with anything. Confidence. I genuinely don't remember where we were. I feel like confidence.
I don't really either.
It's been very skewed. Obviously, I think the big thing that's really hurt confidence is the Dominguez injury, but that's not anything that is disqualifying. It's just like a sucky thing that happened. That's going to be a question this offseason. In terms of like the overall state of things, I think I've made my position clear based on the optimism in the farm system, the fact that the aggressive prospect promotion strategy seems to be a feature more than just a fluke, and the fact that it seems like a lot of these guys are going to have spots in 2024, Dominguez included. I would love – so oh, I guess I'll save that. I guess confidence-wise I'm probably at like a 5.5 because I think it's like tough because like I think a lot has to happen before I can make like a real evaluation of how I feel about the future of the Yankees. But I think for what we've seen of the future, it's been a mixed bag. You know, some guys have done well, some guys haven't. I'm glad to see, you know, guys that are already on the team, like a DJ LeMahieu hitting a lot better. I think maybe I'd even go up to a 6 because I think Dominguez showed a lot of potential that's not going to go away.
Sure.
Like, he's not going to stop with the narratives that he's going to come back and be a shell of himself. It's much different. Look at Gleyber Torres. Like, that's a more comparable situation than 30-year-old Bryce Harper, but or anyone else you want to bring out. But
also, Bryce Harper's been good.
Bryce Harper's been good. Took him just a little bit of time to get back. I think that's what I saw, you know, 3 home runs in his first, like, 200 plate appearances back. Whatever. The case is, I think it's been a mixed bag, but I think generally I'll go up to a 6 because I'm happy of the strategy, and I'm happy that we've seen some good things from some guys like Dominguez. And just generally, I'm glad that these guys are starting to, you know, the future of the Yankees is starting to assemble. I think that leads into one of the reasons or things I'd like to look for. I want to see the same thing, and I think it's kind of happening, but I'd like to see some of the pitchers be called up. I'd like to see Clayton Beter. I'd like to see maybe Will Warren. I think obviously there are some guys who won't be called up, but I want the younger pitchers to continue getting opportunities. I think it's really helped Johnny Brito. I think it's really helped Clark Schmidt to keep getting a lot of run. More Randy Vasquez would be great. Just generally a continued reliance on the young building blocks of this team. We've seen a lot of the hitting, but maybe some more of the pitching side as well. Offensively, like, I don't know if there's anything I'm really looking for, but I think the thing that the other pitching thing I'm going to continue to look for is just the Gerrit Cole Cy Young chase. That's about everything I have to live for at this point. I'm going to be hanging on the edge of every start. I think at this point, like, I feel really good about it just because it would take really bad outings combined with a rise that would be more like a surge from someone else who's on the periphery. The narrative is fully Cole at this point. Even the Sonny Gray whispers, I think he's kind of fallen off, and definitely the advanced stats are going to show, you know, he's giving up home runs at a ridiculously low pace. Plus, like, boomer energy of, you know, this is Cole's time, this is his year, and these writers are going to feel that way. But I just want him to secure it, take it to the finish line. And as I joke to you, the real Whipple curse is that Gerrit Cole is the literal only player on this team who has not had a single negative thing happen to him this year. Knocking on wood, either something bad happens and I will quit the pod, or he'll get the Cy Young, and that would be at least something cool.
Well, we have various reasons then to hope that he wins the Cy Young.
Yes, indeed.
I think my confidence is probably also in like the 5.5 or 6 range. I actually, you know what? Like, if the way we're treating this rating is how we're feeling about the future of the franchise, or at least the, you know, this year and next, like, my confidence is actually like pretty high. I don't know if I'll cite a number other than the 5.5 to 6, but I think we have a lot of reasons to be bullish about what the future holds for this organization. We've talked about many of them on this podcast. One thing we didn't mention is that Brian Cashman was in Japan watching Yoshinobu Yamamoto pitch, and he threw a no-hitter in front of Brian Cashman, which is pretty cool. And the Yankees have been rumored to be primary suitors willing to really pay up when Yamamoto is posted. So that's exciting when you start to piece together next year's roster in your head. I think that with respect to the things I'd like to see over the rest of the season, one is I'd like Anthony Volpe to finish strong. I think Anthony Volpe had, you know, a really great run from that Mets series to the beginning of this month. And then in September, he's only got 4 hits and a 5 WRC plus, which is really tanking the whole, like, Volpe's a 120 WRC plus batter since the Mets series narrative. But again, like, the peripherals there look better than they have looked for him. You know, he's walking a double digit amount of the time this month. He's striking out under 30%, which is not as low. Like, he's been under 25% since that Mets series, but, you know, he was over 30 for a good portion of the beginning of the season. Also, like, it's a 38 plate appearance stretch where he has a 174 BABIP. Like, Anthony Volpe's not going to run a 174 BABIP over any meaningful period of time. So I'm not freaking out by any means about Anthony Volpe, as in, like, there's something underneath that is causing him to struggle in the way that he's struggling. It's just some bad luck, but I think for his confidence, it would be great for him to finish the year strong. And then the other thing I'm looking for is I just really like Everson Pereira. I like that his whole thing is just hitting the crap out of the ball. I think that's a cool thing to have be your calling card. My grandpa, when I was visiting my grandparents over Labor Day weekend, was giving me a hard time about my affinity for Pereira because he hadn't really seen Pereira do anything and Pereira hasn't really done anything. But I think, and we've talked about this, I was worried that Pereira was going to come up and look completely non-competitive against major league pitching. And he certainly struck out a lot, but he's striking out like less than Joey Gallo, for example, which was by no means guaranteed. The weirdest thing about him is we haven't really seen the slug come through. And if you look at expected weighted on base, he should be like an 85-ish WRC plus guy. He's been at 27. I love that he's walking 9% of the time, which is more than he was walking in AAA and more than he walked in his 2022 stint in AA. I think that's awesome. I think it shows a command of the strike zone that we weren't really certain he would have. And Everson Pereira is a great example of like command of the strike zone. A lack of command of the strike zone can lead to a lack of or a high strikeout rate because you're chasing everything. He's not chasing like a ridiculous amount. He just doesn't put the bat on the ball that frequently. And honestly, I prefer that to a guy who swings at everything and that's where his whiffs come from. So I'd love to see him just keep making hard contact. And, you know, we've talked a lot about the fact that he has hit a ball harder this year than like a number of great players. His average exit velocity is over 91 miles an hour, which is like really, really good. I'd like to see him just get like a few solid extra base hits over the rest of the season. Just again, like proof of concept to himself that this is, he can hit in this league and he can do damage. Even if he's not in the plan as a starting outfielder in 2024. And if I had to bet right now, I would bet he's probably not. I certainly believe that Everson Pereira could be a valuable player on this team, and I'd love to see him kind of prove that to himself over the rest of the year.
Yeah, I mean, we know he's going to get the opportunity to do it, and I agree, he's looked impressive, and I'm excited to watch him and him and Volpe and all of the other young hitters. I mean, at this point, their development is the most important thing. So, I mean, even Dominguez, like, despite the injury, we saw what he could do in that. Is important and in some ways just giving him a taste and for his own benefit. I mean, he's going to get paid like a major leaguer during rehab. We love that, but I agree. I think it's going to be really, if you're still watching the Yankees in the next 3 weeks, these are the things that you should be watching for sure.
Absolutely. All right, Whipple, as we wrap up here, any parting shots from you?
Yeah. I mean, we got to circle back to the engagement again. I got thank you. Congratulations again. And this means 2024, the, Yankees Files might have to make an appearance at a wedding venue near you. Like it might the podcast might be live. I don't know. We'll have to contract with our agents and discuss, but the Yankees Files the Files wedding files, maybe we'll have to think of something, but a new era
all
for the podcast.
All kinds of hashtag content and hashtag branding opportunities.
It's a new era for you, but more importantly, a new era for the podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate that. As we get things wrapped up here, you can keep up with everything we do by going to YankeesFiles.com. You can follow us on Twitter, where we're at YankeesFiles. You can even follow us on TikTok, where we're at YankeesFilesPodcast. Podcast is available wherever you get your podcast, and we hope you'll rate, review, and subscribe if you like it. And just subscribe if you don't. Download the episode, listen to it on silent, a bunch of times over, whatever it is. That stuff helps us out. Whipple, it was a pleasure to get back on the mic with you after a hiatus, a well-deserved hiatus, I would say. And we'll be back same time, same place next week to recap the week that was in Boston and in Pittsburgh. And until then, let's go Yankees.